call the Gage County Board of Supervisors meeting to order for May 15th at 8:45. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Flag moved. The Open Meetings Act is on the wall to my left. Attendance by observation: Haxby, Dorn, Keeman, Schuler, Swavely, and Lytle. I don't know how I got Dorn over here. Sorry, Mr. Schuler.
Well, take an R out, it's Dawn.
Messed up.
We'll begin with the consent agenda. Approve the general agenda. Approve minutes of the meeting held May 1st, 2024. Approve all claims through May 15th, 2024, in the amount of $1,361,280.12, $500,000 of which just being an internal transfer. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve district court summary fee report and register deeds fee report for the month of April 2024. Approve utility permit number 1303 to One Oak North System LLC. One Oak will be repairing a pipeline due to corrosion and rust, causing 35% metal loss on pipeline. One Oak will open a 20 by 20 by 4 foot deep excavation and expose pipe 5 feet off the edge of the road. Once pipe is exposed, One Oak will weld a sleeve at damaged area. All excavation will be restored to original conditions once repair is complete. All work is in the south grader ditch of Lilac Road, approximately 3,130 feet east of the intersection of South 66th and Lilac Road, located north of Section 15, Township 3 North, Range 7 East, Rockford. I would ask for a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, unless there are items that you would like to pull off.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Dorn, second by Swavely. Any discussion on the consent agenda? If not, please vote. 6 in favor. Motion carries. Regular agenda. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. Good morning, Ms. Mason. Would you give your name for the record, please?
Ashley Mason, 1300 Lincoln Street. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to start by reminding you that over the years, I have stated my support for this board. I want to take a moment to express my deepest gratitude for the support and encouragement you have shown me throughout my campaign for Gage County Supervisor District 4. Though the outcome may not have been what we had hoped for, I'm immensely grateful for the opportunity to have participated in this democratic process. Today, I stand before you with a renewed sense of purpose and enthusiasm. As we move forward, I am thrilled to announce my full support of Dave Swavely, the incumbent for Gage County Supervisor. Dave has not only demonstrated exceptional leadership during his tenure, but has also shown unwavering dedication to the well-being of our community. Dave's commitment to upholding the law and ensuring accountability in public service is truly commendable. He believes in transparency and integrity, and his track record speaks volumes about his character and values. Dave is a man of compassion, hard work, and integrity, qualities that are essential for effective leadership. Furthermore, I have every intention of continuing to expose every law that Rick Claybaugh has broken while serving on the City Council. No one with such a pattern of blatant lawlessness should be serving the citizens of Gage County. That's something only the Beatrice Council allows. I am confident that Dave Swavely is the right choice to lead our county forward. Therefore, I pledge my full support and dedication to his campaign. I ask my voters to rally behind Dave as we work tirelessly to ensure his victory in the upcoming November election. Thank you once again for your continued service to Gage County, setting the bar high for all of Nebraskans to see that a government body can, in fact, serve with a low budget, build infrastructure, meet the needs of the citizens, and do so with full and complete transparency. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mason. Would anyone else like to speak a public comment? If not, we'll move on to committee reports. Building and grounds, Winter Lights, Mr. Swavely.
We had some telephone issues last Tuesday or whatever it was because of the storms, and it's something that we've always had. Okay, David was calling. Philippi is going to get ready to start. As soon as they get everything flagged, they're going to run the electric out and put the three or the five extra city lights up like they have. And all that cost will be incurred upon the Winter Lights Committee, the county won't pay anything at all for that, okay? You can see masonry construction has the big buggy out there so they can get up to the top of the steeple now. So, and they have the south entrance where people can still walk in while they're working up there in case some of the joints pieces come out, okay? Pat Beach is going to mud jack the east, and you can see this morning I thought somebody was up on the curb with a mud truck or something, but it was actually where they come in and raise that concrete up along the east side here, okay? And that's basically about it right now, okay? So David's working on the election stuff, so.
You mentioned that mud truck deal. Just some comments, and I don't, well, I'm not going to comment on why I get the comments, but it was kind of a mess out there for a while, heavy traffic day because of the elections.
Yeah, it was a bad day to do it, probably.
Some people were not real happy.
I didn't realize.
I would convey it.
I knew they had drilled the hole some time ago, but I didn't know when they were going to do it, okay, so.
I think Dave told me, too. He said he told them the best days would be to avoid Mondays and Tuesdays, but apparently that didn't work in their schedule.
I just thought I'd mention it so I didn't get in trouble.
That's about it.
Equalization, Patty will be talking to the two former referees, see if they are interested in doing that for us again. I would anticipate scheduling that into your schedule next year. It's sounding like the board may be doing that again, which isn't an all bad thing. We'll see how it goes this year, and we'll see if we have anybody that may be interested for the following year. Finance and insurance, Ms. Haxby.
Big ticket items. Applied Connective Technologies, computer IT consultant, $11,265.41. City of Beatrice quarterly EMS, $45,000. Federal Signal Corporation, siren, $25,076.40. Gage County Transfer Funds, $500,000. G-Works annual subscription, $25,449. AC Irrigation and Manufacturing Project Pipe, $52,336.60. Beatrice Concrete, Sand and Gravel, Rock and Gravel, $37,663.20. Manelli Wagner and Associates Consulting Services, $70,450. Sapp Brothers Petroleum, Fuel and Oil,
$23,176.70. Thank you, Ms. Haxby. Human Resource, Employee Relations, nothing to really discuss at this time. Law Enforcement Emergency Management, Mr. Lytle.
Nothing. Lisa, you?
I do.
Yep.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Emily, you touched on the federal siren. That is the completion of that project, which is for the North Siren Project for Beatrice. We had about $10,000 come in either from a grant or either in kind, so we were able to knock off about $10,000 of that expense. So that was tested out on Tuesday, and everything
worked
has sounded. Yep, it all worked good. Going back to the other sirens, as you know, we were having some issues at Cortland. We have two types of deployments for sirens, North Gage County at dispatch, sounds Claytonia, Cortland, and Adams. And then each one of our sirens can be deployed and activated for individually. And so we had receiver, it was identified as receiver issues with that one. Everything's been repaired as of last Friday. So been tested, checked that off the box for right now. They determined it was a power surge of some sort, so most likely lightning of some sort. We also, when we did siren testing, we had determined that Barnson was not receiving connection the correct way. But that was a battery issue. So right now, as of today, should we get some impactful weather tonight, we should be good on siren deployment. So that is what I have for emergency management as far as an update on that. Zoning, we do have our next meeting set for Tuesday, June 18th. We will have two hearings at that particular meeting. The first one will be to have the Beatrice Public, or actually the City of Beatrice, a wellhead district overlay map changes. It adds approximately 720 more acres to those boundary lines. So we will have our hearing at that particular meeting. We've identified, I've got the list. I'm guessing we'll send letters out to maybe 160 individuals of that new area that will be impacted somewhere in there. So, and then the second hearing that we have, we had come in on last Friday was Lincoln Township will be adding a machine repair shop. And so we'll have that hearing for that. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Lisa. Yes. Any questions for Ms. Wiegand?
Okay. Thanks.
Nothing from the sheriff?
No. Just FOP negotiations carry on.
Going smoothly?
Yeah.
Good. Road and Bridge, Mr. Dorn.
Crews have been busy, and the Rockford and Big Indian have been cored, the blacktops. 2 weeks longer for plans and specs on Pickle East. Marshall and Washington County interlocal agreements have been filed. And discussed tubes on Odell and Christ Lutheran blacktop. And discussed administration of a $5.4 million grant. And the two north bridges south of 41 will be replaced with tubes on the Christ Lutheran blacktop, supposedly before it gets overlaid. That's it.
Did you add the supposedly before? anything else for Odin Bridge? Would you like, just as we're in the middle of committee reports, BBCA, Blue Valley Community Action, would like to come and present their quarterly report. Would you guys like them to come in and, I'm sorry?
I think it's our annual report, but sometimes you want people.
Would you like them to come in, or do you want them to just give their report and we can look through it?
I think it'd be nice if they came in.
We can do it either way.
Just my thoughts.
Whatever you want to do. Committee or regular, I don't care.
I guess they could come into committee reports and or committee meetings and just give an update on things.
Okay.
With that, we'll go on to Patrick Kreifels, Regional Administrator for Region 5 Systems, and Matt Kasich, Regional Administrator for Region 5 Services, will provide information on the interlocal agreements and discuss Region 5's annual report and information related to Region 5 activities and initiatives. Are you guys wanting to come up one at a time or together? That'd be great. You give your name and organization for the record, please.
Matt Kasich with Region 5 Services / APACE.
I've got handouts here for everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Well, first off, today my plan is to talk through three things. One, just to give a very, very brief annual review for APACE and the work that we are doing here in Gage County. Two, talk about county funding. And then three, talk about our interlocal agreement. So first off, with me today is Cammie Erb. We Over the past year, kind of restructured how we're doing things here in Gage County. And so Cami is serving as the director for our location here. Cami comes to us from Crete. She's also overseeing our Crete location as well. If you notice on the year in review, we were named the Caregiver of the Year by the Nebraska Caregiver Coalition, and that stemmed from the Crete location. So to say that you're in good hands here in Gage County is an understatement with Cami's leadership, so I wanted her to have the opportunity to meet you all and know what's happening. So I can say that here in Gage County, this has been probably one of our largest growing locations. A lot of that has to do with one of our competitors, Mosaic, but it also is a testament to our service. So kind of those two factors. APACE overall is the largest provider of DD services in the state. So we serve roughly 750 individuals throughout southeast Nebraska. We're kind of the standard bearer. We're looked to by the state. When new regulatory pieces come up, when new funding, new rate setting comes up, we are the ones that are consulted. So we still remain kind of the standard bearer in the state as one of the premier providers. Here in Gage County, we serve just over 50 individuals, and like I said, that number continues to grow. Over the years, we're up to 7 group homes here in Gage County, with the potential for more. The growth continues in that regard, so that is good. And then we have about 60 employees here in Gage County as well. The first page that we have shows our service area and some statistics on that. I always like to call out and promote the employers that we have. So here within Gage County, the employers listed there work very closely with the folks that we support and have hired them. It's so meaningful. You cannot underestimate the value of hiring an individual with a disability. And so I feel that's worthy of note. I think that's worthy of promotion for those employers who are doing that. The next page in the packet, or in the little booklet there, is in reference to county funding. I'm learning, so as Patrick and I have been going around to county meetings, I'm learning that this request is a very unique request in that previously we had requested funding. This year we are not. So there is, for the fiscal year, it's been over $39,000 that we have requested in funding, and this year the request is zero. A couple of reasons for that. The main reason is our funding model has changed. So the individuals we support have, we're primarily Medicaid supported. So with regards to their funding, each individual has a budget of funds in which they, that go towards the services that they receive. Those funds travel with the person. So if somebody wants to work with a PACE, they can, and those funds come to us. If they want to work with a different provider, if they want to move across the state, that funding is tied to those individuals. And so Medicaid constitutes about, I think it's roughly 98% of all of the funding we have. The county funds used to be the primary source of funding. And so way back when, in the 70s, when our organization started, we both, basically counties and the state government was funding us. It was about a 50-50 split between counties and funds. It was tied to geography. So if you lived in Gage County, you had to work with Region 5. Now that's changed. And that really is to provide choice so that the individuals that we serve have the ability to live life as they choose. So I want to note, though, this change doesn't have anything to do with our oversight. I believe one of the things that we tell people, so we, as Region 5, we're a political subdivision. We're a public entity. Our books are open, our regulations, everything is very transparent being a public entity. And so when we are talking with parents and guardians, when they're making that choice as to which provider they're going to choose, that's one thing that truly helps us in saying, you know, not only are we accountable to your son or daughter, we are accountable to the public. Everything that we do is under scrutiny and open. So, so that is the funding request. And then the last two pages. So Patrick and I with Region 5 Systems, over the past year have been working collectively on this project of our interlocal agreement. Essentially, we have one document that governs, one interlocal agreement that governs both a PACE or Region 5 Services and Region 5 Systems. We checked around with some of the existing regions, and what we learned is that it's common that both entities would have their own interlocal agreement. We patterned closely after Region 6 out of Omaha, so it would be DeWitt and Region 6 Behavioral Health Systems up there that both had gone through the process of separating out the entities. The nature of the work both we do within a PACE and what we do and what Patrick and his team do, the scope is different. And what we've essentially learned that each time any one entity has to make a change, for whatever reason, whether it's regulatory or other, we both have to go through the process. We both have to incur legal fees. So now having it separate will allow for us to, you know, if there's a change to behavioral health statutes, then Patrick and his team would work specifically on that. This document, so we're not asking for a motion today. We're simply requesting feedback at this point over these months. And we've, so this agreement that we have here, this is the same agreement that you saw in our last meeting. So we're basically taking all the feedback from these meetings. Our intention is that in September, Emily would, and the rest of the Region 5 board would vote to approve this document. And then after that point in September, we would take it to all of the boards in our 16 counties and then ask for you to adopt these new agreements. With regards to the actual document itself, you know, I am not an attorney, but I've been advised by our counsel this document isn't controversial. It essentially brings us all in line with current day statutes. It brings us in line too with kind of how we do things. There was some terminology in here that was brought to current day standards and how we operate. Statutorily, our agreement points at all of the disabilities statutes, whereas Patrick points at the Behavioral Services Act. So what I have in the packet, I have a clean version and then a red line version so you can see changes. What I would ask for is feedback, and then, like I said, in September we would take it to a vote. We're asking today that basically if you have any feedback to share that within, say, the next 30 days so we can kind of gather all that together. The previous meeting where we talked about this at the governing board, you were one of few that gave feedback. There wasn't much feedback, but the feedback that you did provide is noted. I know specifically there's a line in here, I think it's chapter or paragraph 7, that talks about the funding and when that's due for us. Since we are moving away from county funding, that piece, you had brought up the point of if you're not doing funding, why do you have the, you know, here's when your funding is due line. And that's that, I've gotten that piece of feedback before, and I really see no reason why we would need that in there. So that part can be stricken. But yeah, other than that, those were kind of the highlights of my presentation. Any questions on any part of this?
Within your bylaws, all the member counties have to vote unanimously for any changes. Is that correct?
So the bylaws are a separate piece. So this, the interlocal agreement, is kind of like the contract between us and each of the counties. So the counties have to agree 100%. You know, if you want to be a part of the interlocal agreement, you have to sign on. So that's what makes the interlocal agreement separate. Our bylaws, when we are actually operating, we have a simple majority as kind of what, you know, when we're making policy decisions and things like that.
I guess my question would be, if we're not funding this, why do we have an agreement with you, or why do we have an interlocal?
Great question. So our organization was set up back when the only option was the Beatrice State Home. So institutions were that. And so these six regions were created to essentially provide community-based support. All six regions still remain. So nothing has really changed there as far as the oversight and the governance goes. It's just that funding piece. The funding piece is basically, to put it to you like this, I know that you guys at the board level have many challenges when it comes to funding. You know, there's new programs, there's new things, there's always something where there's a need for funding. And our organization is self-sufficient. You know, the funding model has changed so that way we can essentially get by without the county funding. And so I would much rather have you guys have the ability to spend those funds at your discretion, as opposed to funding our organization when we have means to operate. I can tell you that funding wise, I know we're probably not as we're more fortunate, and we're much more stable financially than the other regions in the state. And that's on them. You know, if their counties want to continue funding them, they certainly can. But again, it goes back to that oversight piece. To have this service in your county, to have the ability to provide supports to people with a direct tie, is really what the intention is of the agreement.
I was just going to say, the reason that this whole thing with the funding part came up, and appreciate you taking notes on those, because I know I wasn't the only one that had brought that up, but the reason that had came to be was because when the funding mechanism changed and it was able to have a choice, Region 5 was then serving three other counties other than those that were participating, Platt, Douglas, mm-hmm. Sarpy. And quite a few of those services were outside of that region. And so if we were serving other counties, either mm-hmm. we all pay or nobody. Right. So that's where that all came from.
And that's one of the things. So when Patrick comes up and talks about the services they provide, it's all within network. It's all within counties. Those borders are very strict. In our world, they're not. And there's a couple of reasons for that. So one, we have a location in Columbus, which is Platt County, and we have a location in Sarpy County as well. Many years ago, there was not the service provision in those communities that was desired. So the state actually asked us years ago to provide support in those communities. And actually looking at where we support, so I give the example of Lincoln. If we're supporting somebody in Lincoln and they decide to move out to Eagle, now they're in Cass County, we would still serve them. We would still want to keep that consistency with that individual. And I think if you look at our addresses of where people live, I think we support upwards of 26 counties, and we have actually 16 in our interlocal agreement. And that's by design. We want to ensure that consistency for the individuals we support so that there's not huge disruptions in their life. But additionally, we're not the only region that does that. So I know I work more closely with Region 4 and 6. Region 6 is the Omaha Metro and the outside counties. They've got an office in Grand Island now, so they're way outside their region. Region 4 doesn't go as far outside, but they still are out of their region as well. So, so yes, good point on that as well.
Do those folks say Cass or any of those counties, do they have an interlocal agreement similar to this then?
Yes. Yep. All of them.
Just anybody that participates.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. It's really the model is following the person as opposed to the geography of where they are.
Yeah. A question. We have referrals like to the juvenile justice system and run into families, individuals need help that Region 5 takes their application, reviews mm-hmm. it, and you're qualified, but there's no funding available. They got to get on a waiting list.
They so get...
It's a little, you know, if you're giving money back from the counties and we have individuals that need help...
Yes, then they would call us. We can work with those individuals, yes. As it is now, the state, so all those individuals are on the DD waiver, some form of the DD waiver. They have to wait to get approved for Medicaid funding, and that's the wait list you hear about. I think there's something like 2,700 people on the wait list currently.
Yeah, I mean,
and so they have, in some cases, they wait up to 8 years to get services.
That's not an, and I'm not being critical of you. I understand yes. it's federal government. That's
bad. I had it turned down.
But I'm just concerned because a lot of these families need fairly
Absolutely.
Immediate help.
Absolutely. Yep.
So I just,
there is some priority funding that is for emergent situations. So if somebody's homeless or if there's a death of their immediate caregiver, there's cases like that where funding, they can skip the line essentially and get funding right away. But otherwise, in most cases, it's a wait. We actually have individuals that will pay us out of pocket to get services because they want the service, but they just haven't gotten the funding yet. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Just so I'm clear.
Yeah.
So now you're not going to need county funding as you have had in the past.
Correct. Correct.
I had to ask. I didn't know if I could believe my ears. It's pretty rare.
Like I said, it's a unique request. Yes. Our funding, yes, the county funds, all of the county funds that we take equate to 0.5% of all of our revenue, and the funding that we get from the counties is not statutorily required. Now, when Patrick talks, there is still funding that is statutorily required for behavioral health, but not for developmental disabilities.
Okay, so that's the difference
yep,
then.
Yep, yep.
Thank you.
Good question, yes.
Yeah. Any other questions for Mr. Kasich?
Well,
thank you
very guys.
Much, sir.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Patrick Kreifels with Region 5 Systems Behavioral Health Authority. And I'd like to pass out a few packets. Can I approach?
Absolutely.
Pass these out. Oh, thank you, Jill.
Sure.
Thank you very much. You. Jill Kazut. Can you tell me your last name, Jill?
Kazelka.
I should know that by now. I've trained with her, and she sits on our Behavioral Health Advisory Committee board. And she's a local member here, and I'm going to have her talk about some of the prevention efforts here in a minute. And I would just want to thank you, Commissioner Haxby, for sitting on our governance board, and we can count on you and your engagement in the board meetings. And I just wanted to thank her in front of all the commissioners for participating in Region 5 Systems Governing Board. So thank you. In your packet, there's a few things I want to go over here today, and I'm going to skip around on you a little bit. So I'd like to start with this long legal sheet right here. And what this is a listing of all the service arrays. So we have a large continuum of care. And so the behavioral health, when we talk about behavioral health, what we mean by that is substance use treatment and mental health treatment, which is different from Matt's scope, which is the developmental disabilities kind of side. So when he talks about separating that interlocal agreement, really we're separate. We have separate tax IDs. We have separate legislative intents and separate scopes, so it makes sense that we kind of separate at this time. But you can see on this sheet here the full service array of all the services that are available to the people in your county, your constituents. So if they have a behavioral health crisis or they need some type of treatment, they can access that. And you can see across the top are the counties, and you can, for gauge, you can see the different types of treatment services that the people from your counties have been accessing. increasing. On the back of that, you'll see for Gage County, there's approximately 586 encounters of individuals. We added the poverty rate for your county and all the other counties just so you can kind of compare that, as well as the population census from 2020. The other sheet is in your packet. Looks like this. It's 8.5 by 11, and it's just narrowing down some of those services. So for Gage County, you can see crisis response services. So that is a mobile crisis response. It's a clinician, or sometimes it's a two-person response that your police can activate if they need help in assessing and determining if someone should be taken into emergency protective custody. There's that two-pronged rule according to the law that they have to meet. Someone has to be diagnosed with a mental illness, a severe persistent mental illness, and be dangerous to self or others. So a clinician is available to come out in person to Gage County or do telehealth, or just talk with the law enforcement officers in regards to what are their options to try to encourage the individual to voluntarily access treatment versus going through that emergency protective custody avenue. The other one is 23 individuals were taken into emergency protective custody and taken to the crisis center in Lincoln. We are opening the board, and Emily, who sits on that board, is part of that award. We did award a voluntary adult crisis center. So this one at the mental health crisis center is for involuntary, so when the police takes some in. But we are opening and awarded integrated behavioral health services, the adult voluntary crisis stabilization center. So people can go there voluntarily without having to go to the emergency room or go to the EPC route. That'll be opening up this fall. It's around 14th and Adams in Lincoln. It's an old nursing home. It's going into construction right now. And Lancaster County dedicated $2.4 million to help with the capital construction of that. And we're dedicating approximately $1.2 million ongoing to the treatment and to receive for all 16 counties. Then you'll go across the way there to the Navigator Service, 11 individuals from Gage County. So the Navigator Service is a peer person that if it's not a crisis and it looks like someone may be struggling with mental health conditions within your county, they can go out there and try and engage them and encourage them to get some help and support. And then the professional partner is a youth, so youth and who have serious emotional disturbances. It's a case management service, so 11 families were served. And that is the one service that we keep. Otherwise, we contract them all out as administrative services. Supported housing, we've offered 7 rental assistance vouchers to your folks, and we have 6. We have contracts with HUD, the United States Housing Urban Development, and we have 6 individuals that we've housed from your county through that contract as well. Any questions about some of that information or data?
The only one I can think of, and I don't want to interject it yet, but possibly, but we had a reduction in our involuntary that the Sheriff's Department could bring up. Used to house, we'll call them not drunk tank, but
The bridge behavioral health, the civil protective custody.
There was a reduction or elimination of that a couple of years ago. Where are you at on that? Because that was a tool that we really did use on a regular basis.
It's a great question, Commissioner, and I'm glad you're asking that. So the bridge behavioral health, just historically, believe they were not operating in compliance with their licensing and their accreditation. So as a member of the network, they have to be accredited by CARF International or JACO or COA. Those are the 3 accreditation organizations. And through their consultation, they believe that they were not appropriately delivering that civil protective custody service. So they said, we're not going to offer that service anymore. It was a little political. I think you probably, I don't know if you remember, but there was challenges with the Lincoln Police Department. It sounds like with your police department, but it was something that they felt like they needed to do. What is available to your law enforcement officers is if someone is voluntarily willing to go. So sometimes I know that dialogue between law enforcement officers and people can be voluntold in a sense, if that makes sense. Like, if you don't go here voluntarily, then you may be at risk of going into jail or something. But there is a social detox service that we still offer. So if someone wants to detox and they can stay, I believe it's up to 5 days. I'm going off memory here. And what they'll do is help them come off of whatever the substances that they're using. So if it's alcohol, it can be dangerous if you drink high volumes of alcohol and you just stop. I mean, you can die from that. So they'll help them detox off of that. Or whatever, if it's opioids, whatever the substance is, they'll help them do that. There is also two other levels of service, and we pay for that. The two others that we also pay for and Medicaid pays for is medication withdrawal 3.7 and 3.2. They're just different intensity levels and have different issues. The bridge, then the other option for them is we fund mental health respite beds. So let's say someone is unhoused and they're using lots of substances. They can start by going through the social detox or the medication withdrawal programming, and then they can transition into the mental health respite or substance use respite. And they can stay there up to 28 days or 30 days, and that's where they'll work with them to try to get them into some housing, get them into some programming and treatment. During the social detoxification phase, they will also do an assessment and say, you know, it looks like you could benefit from some residential substance use treatment, or you could benefit from some intensive outpatient treatment. They are going to use motivational interviewing skills to try and engage that person and get them to take a life of worth living, maybe a different pathway of recovery, if that makes sense. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Yes. So just a few other things. We have received some funding from the Division of Behavioral Health and Lancaster County in regards to the Stepping Up Initiative, and that is this document in here. So the Stepping Up Initiative is a national initiative, and there are four key measures that we're trying to address. So in the back, you'll see Gage County has 42 beds, respectively, in regards to jail beds. And what we're trying to do is reduce the number of people that access those jail beds that have a mental health challenge or mental health illness. And we're trying to increase the connections between that person who has those mental health challenges into treatment services and connect them with that, so they're not kind of going back into jail for misdemeanors. And we're trying to reduce the length of time that they're in jail and then from going back to jail. You can see that Saunders, Lancaster, and Odo have all signed on and signed resolutions to make this a priority within their county. If you all want to do that, at the top there's the arrow and kind of the blue and green. These are the things that you would need to consider to sign that resolution. We've hired Wendy Baumeister, and her email and phone number is on the bottom of that. And so if you want to encourage your jail administrator to get involved in this initiative, I think it would be good for the constituents of your counties and for the jail administrators, because when they have individuals that have these complex needs of physical health or mental health conditions, we can help them kind of navigate that and steer them into other supports in the community, if that makes sense. So something for you to consider, and Wendy can come down here and talk to you if you'd like. She is a history of her professional experience as law enforcement officer. She also is a psychologist and is in and knows behavioral health. So she was an officer for, I think, 7 or 8 years in Grand Island. So good person, good hire for us. Let me talk just a little bit about the interlocal agreements. So Matt did a nice job of introducing that. So I just want to make sure you have two in your packets. One's a red line of any additions and deletions from the prior agreement that you signed. We are a political subdivision, and this is how we are created, is through this interlocal agreement. So our entire existence is each one of the 16 counties has signed on to this, and that creates our existence. So it's an important document, but as Matt stated, there's nothing controversial in here, and it's business as usual. So I hope you'll share this with your county attorney for review. And any of you, if you have feedback for us, please let us know. And then there's a clean copy in there. No motions today. Just look it over. Let me know if you have questions. This September, we'll be voting on this at the board. So Emily, Commissioner Haxby will be voting on that to say, yes, we approve this, and let's move it forward. And then Kim Michael is our corporate compliance officer at Region 5. She's going to send out the final version for you to do a motion on your board in the fall after the September board meeting for Region 5 systems and a PACE. So she'll just help kind of remind you and say you need to get this on your board for a motion and then sign it afterwards and return it to us. Any questions about the interlocal agreement? Okay. I want to, in your packet is also our annual report. Gail Pullman is the board chair. This just outlines some of the statutes and some of the activities, the number of people we've served, the entire continuum of care. The crisis services that are available to your county, the people of your county, and other services. I want Jill to talk a little bit, if she would mind, about some of the prevention activities in the multi-county that includes Gage.
Sure. Thanks, Patrick. He asked me to come down and just share a little bit about what we do as far as prevention work. Region 5 Systems partnered with all the health, many of the health departments, and I am from Public Health Solutions. So I have Gage as one of my counties. Christina and I work together tons and tons and tons. She's actually the lead for the coalition, Gage County Maps. And then underneath of that is a line item for the prevention work that is offered to us through funding through Region 5 Systems. Some of the programs that we run is Second Step, which is a social-emotional program that we have in the schools. Southern has it. Freeman has it. And one other school, Norse. So we support that for them. Circle of Security, which is a parenting program that helps parents learn some more skills to be able to connect when, and make more bonds with their children. And so we offer that in Gage County and always support that class. Wellness Recovery Action Plan, that is a program where you can work with any kind of a challenge that anybody has. So we actually support two or three different workshops, depending if I have to buy materials to go along with that. I love RAP. We did a youth RAP that had 8 kids, and 7 of those kids were from Gage County. And so we are just about to finish up with our first part of that. So that's a pretty cool deal. And then, of course, the big thing that we've been working on is environmental scans. So we partner with Nebraska, Tobacco Free Nebraska, and we went in and did environmental scans in everybody in Gage County that had tobacco licenses. So we personally visited 59 of the businesses and organizations that have tobacco license to make sure that not that they're in connection with any kind of rules or guidelines, but just how they have things set up. For example, do they have signage that is 12 foot up from the floor, which is exactly where youth would look? Or is candy right next to tobacco products? That kind of thing, just so that we can do these scans and see where we are with our tobacco products. And if they... I was surprised that some of them that still had tobacco license, there were some pharmacies on that list because you used to be able to buy tobacco when you went and picked up your medication. So it was kind of an eye-opening type experiences. Vape shops, too, are kind of popping up everywhere, too. Some of the issues there is even the vape shops, do not know what to do with their expired cartridges and the Mod Pods and all of that. There's no proper way to get rid of all that stuff. And so even in our schools, when they are confiscated from students, they just sit in a desk drawer and there's no way to get rid of them. And they have little batteries in there that can blow up and all the things that go along with that. So those are all things that we're looking to do and hopefully bring upon some change and some policy work within tobacco stuff. And I believe next year we're going to focus a little bit more strongly on actual vaping because that is an issue in all of our schools. So that's the other thing that we do is we bring education to the schools if they need some education on vaping. Pretty much whatever they need, they can come to us, and we can see if we can help fund that kind of thing with our prevention efforts. So any questions on strategies that we do for prevention work? Okay.
Thank you, Jill.
You bet.
So part of the coordination efforts that you're hearing that Jill talked about are the prevention efforts. And we also have disaster response. So if there is an emergency, like the tornadoes that just happened and struck up in Omaha or Elkhorn, Region 6 has, and all the regions, have a behavioral health response component to that. So where they'll activate mental health practitioners to go out and talk to people, encourage them not to give up, that there's help and support, help them deal with a crisis from that behavioral health, mental health kind of component, in addition to the National Guard that takes control, or the police, or just all the churches that come in for basic needs. Prevention, and then the treatment, we've talked about that, and just that's the pieces of our statute and requirement. The last thing that is in your packet is the county match funds for next year, so it looks like this right here. What, just historically, what has happened in the legislature, they have reduced the funding in the 107th legislative session. They reduced the funding to the behavioral health regions in Program 38, the Division of Behavioral Health, the legislature and the governor did, by $10.3 million. So that reduced your county match last year. So last year when I came out, I said, you're no longer paying this, now you pay this. And that's per the statute, it came down. And then this last 108th legislative session, they reduced an additional $15 million. And you probably saw in some of the news yesterday that Nebraska has been under an investigation since 2021 from the Department of Justice. And they just released their findings yesterday and had a town hall about that, about how Nebraska is not in compliance with the Olmstead Disabilities Act in the way they are handling and responding to people who have mental health and severe substance use conditions. So there will be some negotiations. And if you think about that, that occurring, that investigation and that finding from the federal government, in addition to the loss of funds that have been given to the behavioral health, it's a little contradictory. So we'll see how this kind of plays out over the next few years. So because of that reduction, your statutory required county match is lower. So if you go to this page right here, you'll see all the counties match and go to gauge. The first column is your current match for the year that we're in, FY23-24. And then what we're asking you to do is sustain that match for next year. No increase, but also not decrease to the statutory required amount, which would be the $43,000. So we're asking you to sustain and maintain that $54,000 for next year.
And we've talked about this some. We hadn't come up with a decision on what we were going to do yet. What was the discussion at the legislative layer? Why the $15 million reduction this year again?
So in 2020, Nebraska voters voted in the Medicaid expansion. I think it was before that. But October 2020 is when expansion occurred. And so that means more people are now eligible to be on the Medicaid rolls or funding, if you will, insurance, versus needing our funding. And then kind of I'm just want to walk you through a little bit of timeline, and I'm going to answer that question here. And then you throw in the pandemic that occurred. So that happened in October 2020, and then the pandemic started in approximately 2021, March 2021. And the federal government declared a state of emergency. So that means no state could reduce or remove someone from Medicaid during this federal state of emergency because they need access to medical care in case they catch COVID or, I don't know, getting shots or boosters, et cetera. So then you had that kind of happen. So during, and then providers in the network were also unable to serve people because licensing came in and said, you got to spread people out. So if you have a bed, 16 beds, treatment facility for substance use or mental health, you know, you can't put two people in the same room, maybe like you would have, because of the, you know, the sharing or disease control, right, for the pandemic. So some of these things that happen in these shifts in our external environmental factors prevented us from spending some of those funds. So the legislature said, well, the regions and the division, you didn't spend those funds that you had available, so we're taking them away from you. But it was within a very narrow window. The system needs a little bit to respond and react. When the federal government took that state of emergency off and lifted that with the pandemic, now Medicaid is going through and doing what they call Medicaid Unwind. So they're doing monthly reviews of individuals. They've done they've reviewed 380 some thousand. Every month we give the board an update, and I'm going off memory here. And they've gone through a full year, and they were supposed to have it done in a full year, and they still haven't done that. So there are still people on Medicaid that probably don't need to be, or maybe it's due, but they're still doing those reviews. So we're still kind of in this phase of like needing to respond and how many people are going to come back onto our roles versus the Medicaid roles. So there was that, the 10.3. That's why that was also part of a rate increase to the providers. So that 10.3 million was the legislature gave a 15 million rate increase to the providers the prior fiscal year. So they only funded it for 1 year. So you can imagine we have, as an administrator, we have to give the providers in the network an increase in their rates. So an outpatient session or a daily rate session, instead of 100, now you have to pay 150. So if you don't fund that, that just decreases access to that service or service capacity. Does that make sense, how I'm describing that? So If you look at the simple message that I think the Division of Behavioral Health was giving out, or the governor's office was giving out, is, well, they're not using the funding, they don't need it. It isn't exactly true, right? We need time to reinvest those funds. We need time to allow for that state of emergency and that unwind to get through. And then we need time to also work with providers and assess service capacity. So that's kind of a little bit of history on why the 10.3 and the 15 million were removed. Next year, I just had a meeting with the Division of Behavioral Health yesterday, the director, and they're saying to me that they are at risk of losing $4 million of federal substance use block grant funds. And they're saying, you know, why are we at risk of losing these federal $4 million block grant funds? So with all the federal block grant funds that come to Nebraska or any state, the state has to match those funds to deliver treatment. Otherwise, you don't get those federal funds. Well, what I said to them is, do you think the $15 million that you cut from our budgets is part of the reason why we're now at risk of losing that $4 million from the federal government? You know, that, and I wasn't trying to be conflictual, but I do have to advocate for the people and the counties right in our service area, and they agree that that was a potential impact or whatever. So it's complicated, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, is this, the model and the formulas as far as what we get from the federal government and what we receive from the state general fund and how that operates. I will say we did have a meeting yesterday and did vote on that at the board meeting. We had a board meeting, and all the counties, all 16 counties voted, or 15 counties, because I know, Emily, you weren't there, and I assume that you had other prior commitments that took priority, and because you usually are there. But all 15 counties voted to sustain the match. Lancaster County's response is that if all 16 counties sustain the match, then they will sustain their match, which you can see for Lancaster County, it's about $162,000.
Substantial. Ms. Axby.
I have a couple things with that. Yes, I had other stuff. I had a lot going on.
I know you do, and I
apologize for missing that one.
It's okay. It's all right. We understand.
I am disappointed that Lancaster's inability to make their own decision on that. I didn't, because they had made their motion. One of their commissioners reached out to me and said that they based their motion on everybody participating. And so I think that their motion that said that they would only maintain if every other county does is manipulating and low for them. But I did talk to Seward County, reached out, and they had voted no already to sustaining. And so I'm just wondering how that's all going to work.
Is there a Seward County member on your board?
Yes, Ken Schmieding, and that's just not my understanding. I've spoken with Commissioner Amick and Commissioner Schmieding. He was there at the board meeting yesterday, so between our April meeting and our May meeting, I've reached out to all the commissioners, and I've spoken with you, Emily, several times, and all 16 commissioners I've spoken to. I did have the opportunity to visit in person with six of them. I did not make it to all 16, but I will be finishing all 16 visits here. But Seward County is intending to support the sustain the match and maintain that, is what Ken told the board, and through a conversation that I had with Commissioner Amick, who's the chair of Seward County. What she explained is that Commissioner Schmieding did not get it on the agenda like it needed to be for the vote, and so they had to move it to the vote to April 21st, I believe is when it's going to be on the agenda. And so, but through their discussions that I had with Commissioner Schmieding and Commissioner Amick, that the majority were in support of sustaining. And so at the board, he reported that the majority were in support of sustaining. He did abstain his vote, though, because it hadn't gone to a full vote, but that's what I know from yesterday.
On May 7th, she had reached out, and so they did not approve a sustained amount.
That would probably be correct, because it wasn't Mr. or Commissioner Schmieding didn't get it on the agenda, I think is maybe what she's saying. And
I
so it's on the 20.
For a while, so.
Yeah, it's on a vote for the 21st. And I explained to Commissioner Schmieding that we need to know. We have to plan our budget. I have to go to the board, the next board meeting in June 8th, is it, Emily, or something, the next one? So that's when I have to prepare and submit a full budget for the next fiscal year.
May 21st?
Yes, May 21st is when Seward County is going to put it to a vote.
Yeah. And you said April.
I'm sorry. We had the April meeting, then their May meeting. So thank you for the clarification. Yeah.
Because I think that if that was the case with that, I don't necessarily have a problem. I just think that for Lancaster, I know they have a large amount, but for them to hold that over everyone, that it's pretty manipulating and low of them. They should be able to make their own decision outside of everybody else's.
I'm not trying to get between counties,
yeah.
And that's not my role. My role is to try to convene and deliver quality behavioral health services within our 16 counties and make sure your county is representative and that you have a full array of behavioral health services available to you, the folks that you serve and that we serve. When I spoke to Commissioner Yoakum from Lancaster County, she had said, there's a difference between equal and fair, right? Equal is we all pay the same amount. Fair is, I want to do, you pay some, we pay some. And I think that's just what she had described to me, was that she felt like it was fair that we all continue to sustain the match, or they're not going to. So I don't know if her intent was to be manipulative, but that's just what she had shared with me.
It was a different commissioner that reached out to me.
And Commissioner Yoakum is the one on our board.
Right.
What's your yearly budget, approximately, total yearly budget, rough numbers?
We receive approximately It's going to be reduced to 17, but 20 million. Next year, it'll be about $17 million in funding. Our indirect administrative, what it takes to operate and have transparency and fiscal accountability of those funds, our indirect administrative is about 4.78%, which is extremely low. 10% to 20% is usually where people operate. So we try to operate a very efficient organization. So we part of our coordination is managing. We manage over 250 contracts and negotiate those contracts on an annual basis. We audit the providers to make sure that they are delivering services, that they're not committing fraud. We handle HUD funds. We handle the opioid settlement funds, which we just had a two-day planning sessions where we brought SAMHSA, the federal government, the Opioid Response Network in to explain what those abatement strategies are in that national lawsuit and how we are going to plan around those. We released 625,000 of those funds and in a grant cycle, and the board will make some decisions on awarding those in June. So we handle multiple. It's, you know, it's complex and multiple sources.
Well, we can't make a decision today, but in 2 weeks we can put it on the agenda to make a decision.
With that being such a small percentage of your budget, I mean, is that how much would that affect you if Lancaster would pull out? I can see why they would say if everyone else does it, we will. They're paying, what, double what all the rest of us combined are, basically. Right.
You also receive more of the services, though, too.
The services are equal to all 16 counties. Every county has the same access to all the services. They just have more people,
right. That's
population.
That's what I'm saying.
But all counties have access. You know, you hear the prevention efforts that are going on in your county. There's no difference in how we are opening the services to just Lancaster County's people.
But, I mean, in all fairness, as we look at funding things, everything we do, if it's probation or anything else, say they receive 70% of the service, they're paying 70% of the
right
bill on this side of things. I mean, given all of our county funding is a small percentage of your funding again, but I do understand that. I can see why they wouldn't want to pay in
right
an extra $650,000 if the rest of us say, hey, we're not paying anything. So it does make sense to a point. Any other questions for Mr. Kreifels? Good timing coming down.
Thank
you. I was going to say, yes. I think what we are doing is good, and I don't see a problem with something like this. So I guess we'll see it in 2 weeks.
I appreciate your time. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the engagement and the feedback. And you can call on me anytime, any of you, if you have questions, and we will be responsive. So thank you.
Thank you both for coming down. Yeah, and Jill as well. Thank you. Ask for a motion to place those reports on file.
Second.
The Gary there. Moved by Dorn, second by Swavely. Please vote. 6 in favor. Motion carries. We'll move on to Engage's quarterly report. Ms. Krackemeyer. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We also have our Engage president here, Andrea Schaefer. She's been with us since the very beginning of Engage. It's kind of nice. Andrea is actually our only exec member that's been there since the inception. So we've had great consistency there. She's doing a great job as well. But I'll let you take it away.
Awesome. Good morning. So in your packets here, I'm going to be pretty brief, and then I will take questions. A lot of what we've been doing at Engage over the last several months, 5 months, we've really ramped up efforts in workforce development, talent recruitment, retention, all of those types of things. I know I talk to you every quarter about the pains and struggles that our businesses are facing, and the number one thing that we're hearing is workforce development. Workforce, where's it coming from? We don't have enough. How do we get more? How do we train them faster? All of those types of things. So a lot of our work, and you'll see a lot of the bullet points on the inside front cover of my report here, is efforts to develop a skilled workforce. So we're working with Southeast Community College and have had lots of meetings with area businesses, manufacturers, specifically with the development of the welding facility out on the Beatrice SCC campus, in hopes that we can utilize that to streamline and build a more robust talent pipeline locally for our manufacturers, which are a large share of the employers or employees in the county. We are also trying to get creative in different ways to engage the younger population as well in hopes to retain them in the local area. I've shared in previous reports some data collected through the Nebraska Community Foundation on what kids are wanting. We know that workforce is first choosing where they want to live and then where they want to work. So we're working with other stakeholders and partners to ensure that we are creating places and spaces to where our area youth want to live, work, stay, and play. And then hoping to further make connections with employers so that they can see that we have a lot of the jobs that they're looking for right here in this area. So one of those efforts is the career fair that we host at Beatrice High School. We had over 30 employers participate in that. And even out of that, we've had some employers recognize off of the questions that students are asking them that what their interests are and things like that and what they need to do to better open up themselves to have job shadowing opportunities, internship opportunities for students as young as 17 years old type of thing. So that's kind of some of the things that we're looking to mitigate and get creative in those areas. Because we know that if we can get these students connected and engaged with these employers now, they can go off, get whatever education needed for the career that they're looking for, and then hopefully they will come back and continue working in that capacity here in our area. Continually working on business recruitment, attraction, retention, those types of things. Right now in the spring is when we do a lot of our BRE visits, so where we sit down with a lot of our business owners and kind of work through a lot of those pain points and figure out what we can do from there. Things have settled down a little bit now that the legislative session has ended. So we're working now on all of the funding opportunities that are coming out. So hopefully we'll see some secured funding coming through for various projects throughout various areas of the county. So with that, I will open it up for questions.
You had a good place on the agenda. People are worn down.
Well, I should probably just say, do you need me to stay up here for the next
one? You may as well. Okay. No questions at all for Engage? Things are moving. Going in the right direction. I've said it each quarter you've come up, but you've done a great job. Keep it up. I get to see that on the inside, I guess, more than I bring up to you guys, but things are going the right direction, and it's exciting to see how Engage is functioning. This is working the way it's supposed to. We've got a great exec team. We've got a great director. Things are moving. We don't always see them. That's okay. Just like in business, you don't see what's happening behind the scenes until you see a new building or you see a new product line, but those things are happening behind the scenes. So thank you very much. Mr. Schuler.
Do you have anything to report of interest in District 6?
Not specifically, but there's a lot of funding opportunities that I've been pushing out to District 6. So if we can get some of the funding secured, we'll see some projects moving forward, hopefully.
Okay. We just need people there to pick up the ball and run with it, too.
Yep. Yep, and I'll be there to help and support them all along the way. Yep.
There's a motel going in District 6.
Well, it's a. You're talking about the one on Main Street?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I don't know if you caught. I guess it's a motel.
Some type of place you stay.
Yeah, yeah. It's a place to stay.
Yeah. Well, I would ask.
I get a plug for the Airbnb on my place. There's people coming in there. It surprises me. Mm-hmm. People come in to watch the lights. From Kansas City, come up this far to watch the Northern Lights.
That's great.
That kind of thing.
That's great.
Yeah, we even had
hotels are full.
Cold in the winter.
It's baseball and softball tournament season, so here we go. We'll have a lot of people visiting the area for sure.
So, thank you.
You bet.
Ask for a motion to put the Engage quarterly report on file.
Second.
Moved by Swavely, second by Dorn. Please vote. 7 in favor. 6 in favor. Up next, with Ms. Krackemeyer here, approve or disapprove the Engage agreement. This would be an extension of it's not an extension, it's a new agreement, but the only items that changed in this contract, according to council, were just a renewal, some renewal verbiage, and then the dates. The city approved this last week, I believe, Tuesday?
Monday, yep.
Last Monday.
Yep, it was signed on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Anything you want to add to this, Roger?
No, like I said, paragraph 1, they just took away a sentence that you had to give them 90 days notice to renew it, so they must like you guys. So that has no meaning or no bearing on our part of the contract, so I don't see any problem.
And this is a 3-year renewal.
Correct.
So
money stays the same.
And like I say, we've had some hiccups along the way early on with this. We resurrected an economic development group from the ashes into what we have now. It wasn't perfect at first, but it's getting better all the time. I will tell you, this is the best shape we've been in since this organization started. So that's great to be able to tell you that instead of, hey, we're going to fix it. So I've got good news this time.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Swavely. Any discussion on this item? If not, please vote. 6 in favor. Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Krackemeyer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schaefer. We appreciate you coming.
Oh, wait, did we need to put Andrea on the spot and make her speak before we did that?
We probably should have.
Oh.
Great to see you all.
Come again anytime.
Thank you.
Discuss, approve, or disapprove the EMS agreements. The EMS agreements, I think you all have copies of those in front of you.
I hope so.
There are no changes to those either other than dates. That would be the same between all the EMS members, I guess. We had talked about changing these at one point in time. We do have budgets coming up, so it's not a rush that we have to have them done. That's what Don asked me. What's the rush? And it's just the contracts are coming up. Our budget year is coming up. Ms. Haxby.
My question is this related to the funding with the budget?
This would go into the budget as far as what we would plan to fund them. As long as you don't go up, it wouldn't be a killer for the budget. You could go down on these agreements, but right now, these would be the numbers that we would be planning in the budget. We don't have to approve them today. That's why we have discuss, approve, or disapprove. We do not have to approve them. We don't have to disapprove them. We can talk about it. If we're going to make any changes, we should probably do it fairly soon.
This is just something we've brought up multiple times this is something we've done it that way for 20 years. Something that I think we should look at just to make sure that these funds are where we should be with everyone instead of just saying, well, we've done it that way for 20 years, so it's still good enough today. We've talked about it. Maybe if we set a group, maybe once law enforcement emergency services committee is done with FOP, we could start talking about a mathematical way to figure this out.
And that would be fine. As of right now, these will probably be the dollars that I'm figuring for our budget as of today, unless you guys tell me to do it differently. We need something. We need a starting point. This is where we've been. So these are probably the dollars that we'll use until you tell me differently.
Well, and that's fine, but we have in here is a three-year. I wouldn't want to vote on this yet today.
Absolutely fine, but I wanted to get it out there. These are both agreements I'd like to. They technically expire at the end of the year. I'm sorry, at the end of our fiscal year. So it seems like it's a ways out, but it's knocking at the door already. Do we have to have them in place before the year is over? No, it's not necessary, but it would be good to have them in place. But if you guys would like to review this, that would be the appropriate committee. It would be law enforcement, I assume, to take a look and see if we want to make any changes.
So you're saying you'd like us to discuss it in committee meetings in a week?
That'd be great. Or we could review them in the meantime, but we could definitely take a look at that at committee meetings. If there are any changes you would like to make, we could bring that to committee meetings and talk about it.
I think the big thing is that if there are changes, we still just need to make sure that the constituents of the county are getting the services that they need.
And for those departments, it would also be nice if we're going to make any changes to give them as much heads up as possible because they do rely on these funds. And I know Mr. Juergens would say a lot of these organizations are very cash rich, but the way some of these departments are split up between ambulance service and fire, their funding is very different also. These aren't dollars that we're required to spend either. These are, if we gave nothing, we aren't required to give any of this money to the different organizations.
So we are satisfying the requirement of the county for
providing additional services.
That's just one thing I might suggest or note. That it's been a while since we had somebody look over these things that really stays on top of the medical requirements. Honestly, we haven't. And at the time these were, you know, Mr. Bauman was involved, and there were some rather lengthy negotiations. We had Dr. Rice, I believe, at that time, was one of our consultants. And I don't like spending money either, but on the other hand, if we're going to take a look at these things, let's make sure we're in compliance. And or there's not been something added that we haven't looked at and added to our contract. I just say it if you're going to look at that. I don't know who that would be, but probably wouldn't hurt. Because how long has it been?
Valid point.
Emily said 20 years. Not quite that long.
That
it
was
about
what I was
15.
Told last time.
Yeah, 14, 15. There may be nothing, but you know, you're dealing with the medical providing and. Even though we provide the funding for these organizations, if we're not covering ourselves,
The other part of that, too, is that funding's been that flat for that many years. I know for a fact that the especially medical stuff for EMS has gone straight up. And so just making sure that we're looking at all the pieces and that's covering what we're needing to cover.
Roger, the determination, if we did pass a three-year contract, the determination is 90 days on this. If we wanted to backtrack and change something as far as year two or year three goes, correct?
We could do that, yeah. Like I said, we're approving an agreement that, quite frankly, in substance hasn't been looked at. We're looking at the numbers, which I understand the fiscal end of that, but I just want to make sure we're also doing our due diligence and making sure that as we give people financial help, we make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing with it.
And that is part of the agreement that they sign that they are. Now we aren't back checking that they are.
We tried.
And these are volunteer organizations other than Beatrice is paid.
You're doing your job, aren't you? Yeah.
Yeah, they're providing a signature by a doctor that says they're doing it, but we don't manage that. The only one that's paid service, or the paid employees, I believe, are Beatrice. And they also take the lion's share of the funding.
We do rely, the state, as they file their reports and stuff, there would be some type of reporting that would let us know there's a problem. And I know within the departments that address the EMS stuff, and I'm certainly not aware of it, but I think most of you as supervisors would hear something from your areas if there was a problem. But I just throw it out.
We can wait on this and discuss if we are going to change any fundings. There's always that discussion, too, each time this comes up, allowing for private ambulance service. Not allowing, but not paying to have ambulance service and bringing private ambulance service in. That may be one of the few places that is a profitable ordeal between insurance and transfers and things like that. Not a business we want to get into at all or have anything to do with. But that always gets brought up as well. We haven't heard, or I haven't heard from any private companies trying to knock on the door to come in. We also have a very good service from each of our volunteer squads and our paid squad here in Beatrice.
I'm just going to suggest that if we don't want to pass it today, that in 2 weeks, no matter where we're at, we can always look at passing it. And then, like I said, if we have to open it back up for year two or whatever to change something, we can.
There's no rush on this, but I just wanted you guys to be thinking about it and wanted to get it on the table so we start talking about it. With that, I don't think we're going to have a motion on this one. So we will go on to discuss and approve or disapprove the 911 agreement. The 911 agreement, we've had a 2% increase each year for the past 3 years, I believe. We've got a three-year contract in front of us. I think it's in front of us. That one, the language in the current one or the one that we have in front of us would be another three-year agreement with no increase for the next 3 years. Beatrice has pumped the brakes, it sounds like, a little bit on 911. They've provided a good service for us. Unless the sheriff has something up his sleeve, we're not looking to dispatch ourselves at this time again. So if we would lock into a little longer term agreement again, like a 3 year, or we have a 4 year agreement in front of us.
I think that's what it was typed up.
But it would just be a flat rate.
No change.
No change to any of the services. We would just be, the language is still in there for the governance board or the member board. Beatrice is running that. We have nothing to do with anything. None of the members have anything to do with anything. They meet. Do you meet quarterly, Sheriff?
Probably monthly, but now I've got them going to quarterly for users.
We're a user. We buy a service. I mean, it may as well be a cell tower. We buy a service. We don't have any input. I mean, that was supposed to wrap their arms around us, kind of give us a hug, make us feel like we belong. it hasn't worked out that way. It's we pay for a service, we receive that service. I'm okay with it that way. We don't have that back and forth. If we need something changed, they've made changes to accommodate us, I think. And as far as I know, we've received good service. So unless you guys would like to do something differently, this would be one that we could continue. This one we also do not have to pass today. Ms. Axby.
Just trying to remember, isn't this something that there was some things that were brought to us to look at with this agreement?
The governance board was one of them. Is that what you're talking about?
Other pieces, some people from the sheriff's office.
Yeah, I think
There were some things like TIN code, things like
there,
that.
There were, and I told Chief, I know he wasn't excited about signing the contract now, and I said, well, the contract's basic. The stuff he's concerned with, we can take care of internally. That's more than anything there. So.
And that would be the users' meetings, which we do have the users' meetings. The governance board was more through the member counties, member communities, things like that.
Eric, I'm just going to suggest that if there are things that we feel needs to be changed, maybe there's just need to be more assertive on the user meetings, mm-hmm. and include the board so that there can be discussion on the board level with the city also to help move those things along. That might be the best route on some of that stuff.
That has been discussed.
I think there were some things they were adamant about changing. I'm just trying to remember if it was with this.
Not with the contract, but with the usage.
With the usage.
Yeah. The biggest thing with the contract I remember discussing was that governance board. We tried to dig our heels in the last time, and absolutely nothing happened again. As I talked to Toby, I said we need to either be a user or a member. What Mr. Lang, Chief Lang, sold us on was we're going to be members. Everybody participates. As this grows, our rates will go down. This is going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread. What happened was it grew, we paid more. It grew, we paid more. It grew, we paid more again. And we received a service. So we aren't members. We're paid subscribers, basically. We have gotten the service, though, that was promised.
I know I think they're losing two of the members on it. I think Crete was going to pull out, and Richardson County, last I'd heard, when their contract's up. But what's that's going to change down there for us, probably really nothing. It'll just be internal probably for them if that happens. So
that's really hearsay and nothing for us to talk about
No.
Now, what we proposed was staying at the same rate that we're at. There's nothing that says we don't say, hey, we're going to offer you this lower amount either. I mean, we do have other options. We do have other people that have wanted us to sign on with them. This is local. It's within our county. We're currently at $236,425. If you guys would want to say a different dollar amount, we can also do that.
In today's world, when you can get a service without an increase, that's a good deal. I mean, that's how I look at things. Where things don't go up, okay, you're and you still get the same service and whatever you had in the past. Why, there's nothing wrong with that. But
so, are we approving to lock in flat for
4 years? Or negotiate something differently with the city. I mean, we could propose that. The city would like to see an increase every year. They'd be fine with a year contract. The longer we can lock in at a flat rate, the better.
Yeah.
The city can also send this back to us and say no. but we can also say
no.
Thank you. And we want to have good partnership back and forth with the city of Beatrice. Although we always hear it's bad, there is a lot of back and forth and good things between the city and the county. We just were talking about Engage. That's a perfect example of a partnership there. We're looking at a piece of ground that the city has, leasing that, using it. That's a good back and forth. I mean, there are constant interactions every day between Gage County, the villages in the county, the cities in the county. Are there conflicts at times? Absolutely. A bunch of us have big egos on councils, boards, village boards. But there's a lot of good stuff that happens back and forth as well. What I need from you guys, though, is this the dollar amount? Thank you, Sheriff.
Yes.
Is this the dollar amount we want to propose? Do we want to enter into a contract with the city again for dispatch, or do you want us to go a different route?
I just make a motion that we approve the four-year contract with no change to the funding.
Second.
So we have a motion by Lytle. Second by Swavely to approve 4-year agreement for dispatch services and 911. At a flat rate, which is currently $236,425 a year.
That's the rate.
I'm sorry?
That's the rate you for the flat, this right. Flat, this
that's
flat
a, rate. Which is our current, Mr. Lytle.
I guess my two cents on this is it's we get a I don't want to say it's high level, but I think it's a pretty good service that we get. They go through a lot of training to do things the right way. As far as liabilities for the county, with their recording and the different record keepings that they do, it does set us up well to try and keep our liability risk as low as possible. So I do feel like this is a good service. I do know it's been a few years since I've heard the numbers for the pieces of equipment that it takes to run that facility. And there are expensive pieces of equipment when you're talking about dispatch. And then on top of the expensive equipment, you've got user fees and stuff that you're paying that goes with that equipment every year that are fairly steep. I remember, 15 years ago that I was on the city council and I was part of the purchase of some of that stuff and the contracts that we were having to have year by year, and I was thinking that was ridiculous amounts of money, and it's only gone up since then. And if we were trying to do that on our own, what would our liability risks be? With doing it on our own, with probably a lesser service than what we're getting now, and then the equipment cost it would cost for us. I mean, I know we've got some stuff in place, but what it would cost to do it ourselves. I think this is a good deal.
We would have just real rough numbers. If we had three people, you're going to be $180,000 to $200,000 a year. We would not have the equipment that they have. This is typical how we operate versus the city. The city buys Benzes. We buy
Chevys.
I was going to say, I was looking for what brand am I going to say.
But,
we run on the lean. They run on the sheen. We would have a radio. We would have the basics that we need, and that's it. We have an extremely low call volume in Gage County, extremely low. When you see our calls for service, that – everything is reported through there. The papers that Gus has to go out and serve, that's a call of service. That's recorded. It's documented. Anything the Sheriff's Department does, it goes in as a call, and it's documented and it's saved. We would have that in a different system instead of timestamped, GPS-stamped, everything else that we have now. So we do receive a lot more than what we would get, or we receive a lot more than any of the surrounding counties receive currently. So
I was just going to say that with this being, as you stated, Eric, that this is a service that we receive or pay for, it's also our job to be looking to, and we look at other options to make sure that we're getting a good service and a good deal.
If you want to do something differently, this would give us 4 years to look into that and have it set up as well. It gives some cushion. This stuff does not change overnight. I'm sure most of you remember our joys of radios. All we talked about, we need to talk about roads and bridges. All we talked about for years were radios and how they don't work. And we went to a cheaper radio system. It works now. We don't talk about radios anymore. It's wonderful. This would not be something that we would change overnight if we were going to change it, but...
But Emily's right. I give us time to do it.
All right. We have a motion by Lytle, second by Swavely. Anything else? I'm sure the city's going to love that we have this in before budget time. Please vote. 6 in favor. Motion carries. This one we'll bring back in 2 weeks. Discuss and approve or disapprove placing stop signs on A and C intersecting 2nd Street based on the engineer's recommendations in Holmesville, Nebraska, due to line of sight issues.
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Lytle, second by Schuler. We did have a report back from Manelli and Wagner that said there are line of sight issues in town in Holmesville at these two intersections. These would be 4-way stops, not 2-way stops in the village.
But it's to keep trucks out of the main street, right?
No, it's for line of sight issues. Any discussion on these two stop signs? Ms. Haxby.
I just am trying to compare with other stop signs that we've been approached with and how this differs, and why we look at this stop sign and how it says okay here, and we have others that have been approached by us multiple times and yet.
I asked that question and the exact answer was these have line of sight issues that do not allow for safe driving conditions. Mr. Juergen's comment after that was, if there's impediments to the intersection, why don't we remove those instead of putting stop signs in?
Correct.
Yep.
So that's another option. I mean, we can go in with the excavator and remove the impediment or require the landowner to do that, which they would be required to do. So this isn't something you have to do.
No.
This is the recommendation of the engineer.
So you'd be going into a village and removing?
First step would be requiring the landowners to remove whatever's in the way on their property, similar to a plum thicket in a right-of-way, like we require
in rural county roads. I guess I look at a rural county road different than I would a village, a county road that runs through a village. I mean, people have small lots and like landscaping and...
This isn't a county road. This would be a township, or this is the one county road through the village, which probably shouldn't be a county road.
Right. Because if this was, I was going to say, if this was a village thing, then we wouldn't be voting on it anyway.
Right.
So. Well, there, though, they're unincorporated, so it would be a township issue then, which we have a whole different set of... We still have a different set of problems, though, on the township roads through town as well.
But even if it's a line of sight, you know, or one set of stop signs, it's, I'm probably disagreeing on this one.
Well, it's up to you guys if you want to provide those stop signs based on the engineer's report or if you'd like to go a different route and remove the impediments.
You got an engineer telling you got a problem. You got two things to do: remove the problem or put a stop sign up.
Mine would be more of a remove the problem, just because that's something we've been advocating for anyway, clearing our right of ways. And
Mr. Conkey, I guess I'll have you come up to the microphone just to ask a couple quick questions. Are these trees or these bushes? I did not go and run down C Street.
The southern intersection, there are several trees that impede sight distance on the east side. There are currently yield signs on the east-west intersections of both these intersections. On the north one, there is a large tree at the northeast corner, I believe, that overhangs. And then fencing and so on and so forth.
As far as cost, about two stop signs, right?
Very minimal. We have stop signs.
And Gus has to enforce it.
Gus has to enforce it. That's the other thing.
That covers our liability.
Yes.
If we put the stop signs up now and then we work on removing the impediments and then want to take the stop signs back down, is that an option?
Sure.
Right.
Absolutely.
I would say we move forward with the stop signs myself.
I mean, we all know how much fun taking trees down, but now you're talking fences too. That could be a little fun.
I have been told, I don't know for sure because we haven't called diggers, that there are utility lines along each side of the road that are fairly shallow. There again, that's hearsay. I don't know. I can't confirm.
Be careful putting the poles in for the stop signs.
Be careful putting taking the trees out.
You locate that before you put any stop signs out.
Everything will be located before we place stops.
Did we take out the last stop sign that we put in?
No, we have not. It's still on temporary status with them redoing 136 in the next year or so. That would probably be beneficial to keep. The landowner is removing some of those trees at that southwest corner. So after the detour route or the reconditioning of 136, I would probably strongly suggest removing that stop sign because he has done quite a bit of cleanup down there.
Any additional discussion on these stop signs?
Where's that at?
Southwest 131st and Lilac.
Thank you.
No. Is that at Lilac?
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking Locust or Linden.
No. It's 1 mile north of 136.
We'll do that.
1 mile south?
North.
136.
That's a
good
fiber.
Yeah.
It
is.
Oh, okay.
It would be neat, though.
Anything else?
No.
Ms. Axby.
I mean, Gary, the idea with this is something we can set in place now and then work on the issue. If we do it that way, like as the motion sits right now, it's just saying we're going to do it would be amendable to
sure.
saying that we work on the line.
Dave, hold on a second. I'm good with amending the motion to say that, to say that once the impediments are out of the way, the stop signs come back down.
Or get a new study performed to see.
Yeah.
And any stop sign, any regulatory sign can be removed.
You were
the resolution.
Oh, yeah, you were the second.
Oh, never mind, Dave.
Bye, Dave.
All right. Anything else on these stop signs?
So we're good with amending it?
I am good as the motion, yep.
And is if the situation changes, we can...
So the motion will be approves placing four-way stops at A and C on 2nd Street based on the engineer's recommendation, Holmesville, Nebraska, as conditions change, re-reviewing that and having an additional engineer study of the line of sight.
But it's something that we will work on the line of sight issues to eventually remove.
I'm pretty sure we could work on them really quickly. I mean, like, they could be gone. All right. Additional discussion? If not, please vote. 5 in favor, motion carries. That brings us to the end of our agenda. We do need a closed session for FOP negotiation update. No.
Wait, yes, that too.
Negotiations with the city.
Oh, so negotiation update for county contracts between two organizations. I would almost say we take a 10-minute recess before, nope, we need to get going into it?
Dave's got a doctor's appointment he has to leave for, and he needs to be in this closed session.
Okay, I'd ask for a motion to go into closed session at 10:34, necessary for the protection of the public interest or for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of an individual, with the purpose being negotiations for FOP and also contract negotiations for the county with another organization.
So moved.
Moved by Lytle. Second by Haxby to go in at 10:34. Please vote. 5 in favor. Motion carries.
Hey, was she?
Did anyone else see her strike me?
I did.
Yeah.
I'd ask for a motion to come out of closed session at 11:41.
I saw the expression on her face.
So moved.
Moved by Schuler. Motion dies on lack of a second.
Yeah.
Let's try this again.
Okay. I'd ask for a motion to come out of closed session at 11:41.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Schuler. Second by Lytle. Please vote.
6 in favor.
4 in favor. We were in closed session for contract negotiations. Anything else for the good of the order? If not, we will adjourn at 11:41.